listening to 103.1 FM and 980 AM WPFP Park Falls. This is Trail Mix 103.1.
This week on Viewpoints.
Some people want extra attention. Other customers want to be left alone. There's an innate sense that these lifers have where they can read somebody pretty quickly, even if they don't know them.
The job that requires so much more than what the title suggests. Then,
there's at least a dozen operating in Washington State in the period that I'm talking about. There were six in 1974.
What was it about the Pacific Northwest that brewed so many killers in a short span? I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
My perfect day has sand, salt water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything.
Nothing is everything.
Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Think about the last time you were in a diner. Maybe it was someplace local, or perhaps a stop along the interstate. Or maybe you came upon a perfect piece of pie and cup of coffee in an all-night place on a trip to a new city. Some people are like Candace Taylor, a diner devotee. Taylor is a cultural critic, photographer, and author of the book Counterculture, The American Coffee Shop Waitress. She spent 8 years at coffee shop counters around the country talking to waitresses who weren't just working at a job, but who had devoted their lives to serving food, drink, and hospitality.
The main thing that fascinates me about diner waitresses is that these women are classic lifers. They're kind of icons of American culture. They've been working in diners and coffee shops most of their lives. Several in the book have been working in the same place for up to 50 years. And I just think it's fascinating that anybody does anything for 50 years, especially waitress, because it's such a demanding job.
She didn't go to just any local restaurant and start talking to the wait staff. Taylor had some very strict rules about just what distinguished diners and coffee shops from other eating establishments.
You had to have a counter where the locals gather, where there's a community happening in the space, and also a place that served breakfast, because that's also usually the price point is much lower than in regular restaurants. And what I was most interested in was finding local institutions that were staples in the community. So if and when they left, it was a huge loss for the community, and especially those waitresses that are serving those regular customers. That relationship was really important to me to explore.
Taylor also had criteria for the waitresses themselves. She wanted to speak to women who were about 50 years or older and were lifers. That is, they saw waitressing as a career, not a stopgap until something better came along. Taylor traveled more than 26,000 miles and interviewed and photographed 59 waitresses in 43 cities, from a 150-year-old diner in Kentucky to truck stops on the interstates to large, busy coffee shops in San Francisco, Philadelphia, and Reno. She said that many of the women she talked to began waiting tables very young, not expecting to turn it into a lifetime career.
A lot of them started 13, 14 years old. You know, for the most part, I don't really know anybody who says, oh, I want to be a waitress. It's usually something you kind of fall into because, sadly, it's considered a skillless job, one that anyone can get. And the book really addresses the issue that this is not a skillless job and not everybody's cut out to be a waitress.
What does it take to be a great coffee shop waitress? Stamina, for sure, but also a lot of people skills.
It's really an innate sense of knowing people, loving people, really, really loving the public. You have to be extremely organized. You have to anticipate a person's needs, and all people are different. So some people want extra attention. Other customers want to be left alone. There's an innate sense that these lifers have where they can read somebody pretty quickly, even if they don't know them. And I think that's a skill that you can't really teach somebody. You either kind of have it or you don't. You know, being organized, obviously not everyone is really organized. It's easy to fall behind in waitressing. And when you do, it's really painful. It's a hard job. And that's why I think it gets such a bad rap, because there's so many people doing it who really aren't cut out to do it. And then it gets the reputation of being this terrible, mind-numbing, physically challenging job. And for these ladies, it's not.
One thing that surprised Taylor was that the waitresses she talked to were able to make ends meet on their pay and even prosper.
Because they work for good management, when they pay their dues and they've been there for 30 or 40 years, they do make a higher hourly wage, a lot of them do, than those who just come in off the street. Plus, these women have a huge local following. Georgina in the Gold and Silver in Reno, Nevada, 90% of her customers are regulars. So after so many years, they tend to leave more money than, you know, a tourist or somebody who doesn't know her. And it adds up. Also, they're so good at their jobs, they can serve a lot more tables than the average waitress or waitress who isn't as fast.
It's not just longevity and skill that enhances a waitress's take-home pay. Taylor learned that making money and creating lasting relationships at the diner was sometimes a matter of geography.
Counter waitresses generally have the regulars are sitting at the counter. Table waitresses also have regulars, but there's something about the connection of sitting at the counter because regulars are sometimes sitting next to each other. There's a little more of a community atmosphere there.
Taylor talked to many veteran waitresses who forged very strong bonds with their customers. One of them, Faye Blackwell of Trio Restaurant in Washington, D.C., stands out.
Trio's is in DuPont Circle, which is largely a gay area of D.C. So a lot of her customers are gay men who have been largely ostracized by their families. A lot of them are younger, too. And Faye, over the years, was kind of a surrogate mother to a lot of these boys slash men. And Faye was there in the early 80s when AIDS was kind of a death sentence. And she said every couple of weeks, somebody was getting sick. Every month, somebody was dying. She spent so many days in hospitals and hospices. She would go and hold their hands while they were dying.
Career waitresses understand how to make a customer a regular. Taylor says they have the uncanny ability to bring even the shyest patron into the diner fold.
I went to so many different kinds of diners. I went to some in really small towns, small rural towns in Kentucky, a lunch counter that had been there for over 150 years. I also interviewed waitresses in urban places, you know, downtown San Francisco, Sears, Fine Foods, that has a lot of tourists and regulars. And I think that it's a catch-22. A lot of these waitresses, you know, Faye said, after two or three times I see someone, I consider them a regular. She said, I ask them about, you know, their health and their job and their lives, and then she starts to make a connection. Carol said the same thing from Sears. You know, she said, after you serve them coffee every day for a while, you just say, hey, what was your name? Like, you've always been friends.
Unfortunately, many of these longtime waitresses and the diners they work in are in danger. A lot of family-owned restaurants are struggling with inflation that's driving up food and rent prices, and sadly, many are being replaced by corporate fast casual chains. Taylor urges listeners to support these important community spaces when possible. To find out more about this topic and our guest, Candace Taylor, head to viewpointsradio.org. This segment originally aired in December 2017. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, the land of serial killers when Viewpoints returns.
What What's on your summer wish list? More beach days? Endless pool parties? No matter how you're soaking up the sun, Macy's Summer Favorite Sale has top designer looks for less. Swimming cover-ups from Ann Cole, LaBlanca, and more, 40% off. For the guys, new trunks from Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, and lots of others, 50% off. Plus, get half off kids' swim shorts and tees, too. Get ready for summer fun. Hurry into our Summer Favorite Sale, happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
All right, Takis fans, Wendy's knows you love your Takis Fuego chips, so we thought, why not make a Takis Fuego meal with a Takis Fuego chicken sandwich with spicy chicken topped with crushed Takis Fuego chips and creamy corn spread. Plus, it comes with Fuego fries inspired by Takis and a bag of Takis Fuego chips. If we add any more heat, we might start an actual... I told him this would happen. For an intense new take on Takis chips, gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
KFC presents a story about the pursuit of flavor. When one executive told Colonel Sanders 4 Phillips boxes was too many, the Colonel decided he had one too many executives. Enjoy 4 KFC Phillips with original recipe fried chicken, creamy mashed potatoes, pie poppers, and a refreshing drink for $7 each. The Colonel lived, so we could chicken. KFC Phillips, just $7 each.
Prices and participation vary while supplies last. Taxes, tips, and fees extra.
Are you wet shaving? You'll get razor bumps.
Nah, Pops. I'm good with Gillette Skin Guard. How long you been growing that beard mama hates anyway?
Since 77. I shaved and got ingrown so bad.
That's why I use the Gillette Skin Guard razor, face scrub, shave gel, and moisturizer. So I don't have to worry about new razor bumps or shaving irritation.
Gillette Skin Guard, huh? Your mama's gonna love this one.
The best a man can get keeps getting better with Gillette Skin Guard. Buy now at a retailer near you.
When people picture the Pacific Northwest, they often imagine misty mountains, towering evergreens, and peaceful streams carving through ancient forests. But half a century ago, this idyllic landscape masked something far more sinister. In the 1970s and 80s, the region became ground zero for a chilling wave of serial violence. Names like Ted Bundy, Gary Ridgway, the so-called Green River Killer, and others left entire communities on edge.
There's at least a dozen operating in Washington State in the period that I'm talking about. There were 6 in 1974, which was a year I spent quite a bit of time delineating, because that's when Ted Bundy began his most horrific spate of activities.
That's Pulitzer Prize-winning author Caroline Fraser, author of Murderland, Crime and Bloodlust in the Time of Serial Killers. She grew up in Washington State and at age 13 was living just a few miles from where Ted Bundy was preying on women. She remembers quite vividly what it was like living through that reign of terror.
It was a very bizarre summer, the summer of 1974, because there was a particular weekend in July of that year when 2 women disappeared from the beach at Lake Sammamish, which was only a few miles from where I lived. It was a hot weekend. It was Sunday. There were thousands of people at the beach that day. And somehow, you know, 2 women disappeared on the same afternoon. And when that happened, I think the public, the police, and the media really started to put all of these disappearances together. And there was real hysteria about it.
According to the National Institute of Justice, a serial killer is someone who commits 2 or more murders on separate occasions. Ted Bundy has been linked to the deaths of 20 women, but some experts estimate that this figure is much higher. The same can be said for Gary Ridgway, who killed 49 victims, but may have been responsible for twice as many murders. Fraser says the tragic history of this era is that women were told by law enforcement and some women's groups to not fight back if attacked. Of course, that advice has now been replaced by a fierce directive to fight like hell.
There was a sense that if you tried to fight, that you would just be killed. And so women were told just to kind of passively accept what was happening. Most of the victims that I'm describing, they had no experience of this kind of thing ever until the moment at which their lives were at stake. They did not see it coming. I mean, Ted Bundy was infamous for, you know, maneuvering women into a position where he could hit them over the back of the head with a tire iron or whatever. So a lot of these women didn't even see what was happening. And those that did fight back. I mean, the one woman who survived his attack in Salt Lake City fought him desperately and was able to run away and be saved by a passing car.
Nobody knows for sure what causes someone to become a serial killer. However, the FBI has compiled a profile of characteristics past killers have all had in common. This includes childhood physical abuse, sexual abuse, poverty, poor diet, exposure to violence, and head trauma. But there's another element that's been theorized, and that's exposure to environmental pollutants, such as lead and arsenic. It's called the lead crime hypothesis and was first speculated in 1994 by Rick Nevin, a consultant for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Nevin was researching the cost and benefits of removing lead from old houses when he noticed something very interesting.
It was looking at the very sharp rise in crime throughout the, you know, beginning in the 60s and continuing in the 70s. And 80s. And then, you know, in the mid 90s, it starts to fall off quite abruptly. And we had never seen those heights in terms of the rate of violent crime in this country before. So it attracted a lot of attention from, you know, scientists and epidemiologists trying to figure out ways to explain why did crime rise so high during this period? And also, why did it fall off abruptly? And people like Rick Nevin and others began to look at lead in the atmosphere, because at that time, the leaded gas was being sold all across the country, all across the world, really. And you see similar rises in the rates of crime in other countries.
The dangers of lead exposure are well documented. It can lead to long-term developmental and behavioral problems in children and has been linked to violent crime later in life. The fact that crime rates all across the country rose with the use of leaded gasoline and then fell dramatically once unleaded gas was introduced to the market got Fraser to wonder why so many serial killers came from the Pacific Northwest. If leaded gas was sold everywhere, what made this region such a hotspot for murderers? And then it struck her, the smelting industry.
I think we've actually sort of forgotten what smelters are, but they were burning rocks. They were taking in ores from mines that contained all kinds of different metals. And the process of heating these ores in order to separate the metals out, the lead from the copper, from the silver, from the gold, is an enormously hazardous process and incredibly polluting. And the other thing that those ores contained was arsenic. And Tacoma was infamous for the amount of arsenic that that smelter was putting into the air.
Ted Bundy lived with his mother in Tacoma, 5 miles from the American Smelting and Refining Company.
The place that they lived for the longest when he was growing up was also right next to Highway 16. And the home that they lived in was later identified on a map that the Department of Ecology in Washington developed as having high rates of lead and arsenic in the soil in that yard, such that they actually advised the owners of that home to remove the soil.
In 1970, Congress passed the Clean Air Act and established the Environmental Protection Agency to address the problems of lead and arsenic in the air, among other pollutants. Although it took many years to see an improvement from these regulations, 50 years later, we have substantially cleaner air. We also have fewer serial killers.
In the 80s and early 90s, there was a high of around 700 serial killers that were known. Now there's a number that's somewhere in the 100. So, yeah, so there's still serial killers. There probably always will be, but there has been a real decline.
Fraser worries about the ripple effects of loosening environmental regulations in the U.S. and the long-term consequences of cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency.
We still have lead in pipes. A lot of public schools in this country are old and have lead pipes. The Biden administration was attempting to address this problem and had assigned a significant amount of money to try and fix that. We still have lead paint in a lot of old housing. There's lead dust in many old houses. Even if you maybe don't have a lead paint problem, you may not realize that up in your attic, if the attic is old enough, there may be dust from the 90s, you know, the 80s, that contains significant amounts of lead.
The lead crime hypothesis has never been proven, but perhaps at best, it's a cautionary tale. Caroline Fraser's book, Murderland, Crime and Bloodlust in the Time of Serial Killers, is available now online and at your local bookstore. To find out more about our guests this week, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written and produced by Polly Hansen. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
What's on your summer wish list? More beach days? Endless pool parties? No matter how you're soaking up the sun, Macy's Summer Favorite Sale has top designer looks for less. Swimming cover-ups from Ann Cole, LaBlanca, and more, 40% off. For the guys, new trunks from Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, and lots of others, 50% off. Plus, get half off kids' swim shorts and tees, too. Get ready for summer fun. Hurry into our Summer Favorite Sale, happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time. The next time you're out to dinner with friends, you can order the shrimp cocktail for the table. And maybe you'll realize it only comes with four shrimp after you've already given away three, but that one shrimp will be so good. And if you switch and save hundreds, you could get shrimp all the time. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For shrimp. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. I recently traveled to Birmingham, Alabama to attend the Future of Learning Summit, which was being held by EdFarm, a Birmingham-based nonprofit that's helping students build their digital skills. This covers a wide net of activities from learning the basics of coding or 3D printing to how to edit a podcast or shorts video and AI. Across many parts of the U.S., especially in low-income areas with high poverty rates, entire communities don't have access to reliable internet. As a result, millions of kids and teens are falling behind on the critical skills required to land a good job. By 2030, it's estimated that 92% of U.S. positions will require some level of digital expertise, according to the World Economic Forum. One-third of workers today don't meet this bar. EdFarm is working to change this by transforming old classrooms and spaces into modern tech hubs. So far, it's partnered with 340 schools across 5 states to revamp curriculums and after-school and summer programs. While I was in Alabama, I visited a partner school, Huffman Middle in Birmingham, and spoke with students who were using new tablets and computers to learn new skills. Everyone had different passions. While one teen was busy learning how to code to create a health-focused mobile app, another was troubleshooting how to use new software to produce music. There were so many great ideas, and the room was filled with creativity and energy. Above all, the space represented new opportunity. It allowed teens to imagine a different future, far outside of the barriers many have lived within. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. In 2002, writer Alex Garland and director Danny Boyle teamed up to make 28 Days Later, which has become one of the most famous and beloved zombie movies of all time. This year, Garland and Boyle have returned to their universe with the film 28 Years Later, which serves as something of a sequel to 28 Days Later, but also works as a standalone film for people who haven't seen or don't remember the 2002 original. In 28 years later, the so-called rage virus has been eradicated from the mainland of Europe, but the British Isles serve as a quarantine zone filled with infected. The film tells a story of one family, the father Jamie, played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, the mother Isla, played by Jodie Comer, and their son Spike, played by newcomer Alfie Williams. This family of three lives in a small community on an island connected to the infection zone by a single causeway. Jamie insists on bringing 12-year-old Spike on his first ceremonial hunting trip to the infection zone, and well, as you might imagine, things don't go exactly as expected. Like 28 Days Later before it, 28 Years Later changes form several times with plot twists throughout. Without spoiling any of those plot developments, I will say that 28 Years Later is a pretty gnarly zombie horror movie full of graphic violence and gore, while also being a family drama and a coming-of-age story. It all amounts to a tense but tender story of isolation and grief, forcing characters to acknowledge their own mortality and mourn for the overwhelming number of people who have died in the movie's universe. With an absolutely wonderful script from Garland and virtuoso direction by Boyle that both heightens the tension of the horror and isn't afraid to slow down to let the drama breathe, 28 Years Later is one of the best films of the year. I'm Evan Rook.
Oh, by the way, Ivan's no longer on the project. His wife got a new job, so they're moving across the country.
Robin's top researcher is deviating to a new market. This isn't standard.
And now we're short-staffed. Who's gonna finish all these projects?
She needs a cluster of new data analysts, and there's no margin for error.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Put our matching platform to work so you can spend less time searching and more time connecting with talented candidates. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
I can't believe how spotless my floors look after using the Swiffer Power Mop. No more dragging around a heavy mop and messy bucket. Now I get the same deep clean without all the work. Thanks to the powerful solution and scrubbing pad of the Swiffer Power Mop, dirt and grime don't stand a chance, and I don't break a sweat. Mic drop. mop drop. Swiffer Power Mop. Swiffer Power Mop. A smarter way to mop. Try it or your money back.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
Adventure is calling and your car needs to answer. Get your vehicle summer ready with CarQuest Auto Parts in Park Falls. 5 quarts of premium Fram full synthetic oil plus a CarQuest premium filter, all for just $28.99. Stay ahead of summer maintenance and keep your summer plans on track. Stop by your neighborhood CarQuest Auto Parts in Park Falls today, because every great adventure starts with a reliable engine. CarQuest Auto Parts, locally owned and community driven on Highway 13 in Park Falls.
Roll in to CarQuest and roll on.
Get ready for a laid-back summer with 98Q Country and Trail Mix WPFP. Now through July 30th, one qualifier will be picked each weekday. Listen for the daily keyword announced several times on both stations, then text it using the free Civic Media app to enter. All qualifiers win a prize, and one scores the grand prize, a recliner from Shawamigan Home Furnishings. The winner will be drawn Friday, August 1st, under the Flamborama tent. Must be present to win! Don't miss your chance. Listen for daily keywords on 98Q Country and Trail Mix WPFP.
No more mold. No more damage. No more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a Never-Clear glass treated door. BCI Bath and Shower. Interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Quite a bit of sunshine around the area today, but areas of smoke as well. Highs in the upper 70s. Our winds will be light out of the east and northeast. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, still a little smoke around with lows in the middle 50s, upper 70s Monday. Right now, it's 45 degrees.
You're listening to Radio Health Journal, the trusted news source for medicine, science, and technology. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
I'm Mayan Vosta-Betancourt.
And I'm Greg Johnson. This week, should you eat your sunscreen?
Edible sunscreens are typically supplements, usually the vitamin, an antioxidant, a plant extract, for example, and these actually help provide some protection.
But first, can your DNA predict your future salary?
It can predict your BMI, your cholesterol level, your blood pressure, your risk of depression, and so on. If you name an outcome, there's a PGI for it.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
Mira, Jorge, let's bring the nail gun over here.
Jose stands tall atop his sustainable flooring company.
Totally. It's renewable and moisture resistant, but we have several green options too. Or we got some beautiful reclaimed oak.
By his success, he needs to hire more installers.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job on Indeed, it's easier for talented candidates to find it, which makes it easier for you to hire them. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Are you wet shaving? You'll get razor bumps.
Nah, Pops, I'm good with Gillette Skin Guard. How long you been growing that beard mama hates anyway?
Since 77. I shaved and got ingrown so bad.
That's why I use the Gillette Skin Guard razor, face scrub, shave gel, and moisturizer. So I don't have to worry about new razor bumps or shaving irritation.
Gillette Skin Guard, huh? Your mama's gonna love this one.
The best a man can get keeps getting better with Gillette Skin Guard. Buy now at a retailer near you.
If you've ever felt like you're destined to be rich and successful, you may be right. And I'm not talking about karma or your astrological sign. Dalton Conley, a sociologist, says your genes could hold the roadmap of your entire life. His new book, The Social Genome, explores the century-old debate of nature versus nurture by breaking down the genetic predictions that make up each one of us. It's a relatively new finding that came out of scientists finally being able to sequence the human genome in 2003. In other words, we finally had the ability to read the equivalent of a human instruction manual.
There had been a betting pool to see how many genes humans actually had. After all, like rice had about 100,000 genes. And so I think the lowest bid was somewhere around 90,000 genes. And it turned out that we only have 20,000 genes. Nobody was even close in the betting pool in the Human Genome Project. But still, they thought that once that so-called dictionary of life had been decoded, that it would be a few short years before we knew the 5 genes behind heart disease and the 10 behind schizophrenia and the dozen behind cognitive ability. And then, you know, Big Pharma would get to work on making mimics of those genes or blockers of those genes, as the case may be.
Conley is the Henry Putnam University Professor of Sociology at Princeton University. He says that scientists believed the hardest part was over, and now they'd have a specific instruction manual to make the best, most effective drugs for any need. But as you might have guessed, this hope was nowhere near reality. Instead of a few genes impacting conditions like arthritis or high blood pressure, the researchers realized that these outcomes were controlled by small differences across the entire genome, which consists of around 3 billion base pairs. So in order to find these small differences, scientists scan the entire genome to see which parts of the DNA have an effect on a single condition, like heart disease.
The effects were so teeny that at first they despaired, but then in 2009, someone realized you can sum all these little effects into a single score, And that's what's called the polygenic score, the polygenic index is the term I use now. And I call that the FICO credit score of human biology. But it really is scores, because you have one for height, how to predict how tall you're going to be. And in fact, that score can predict your, you know, a baby's adult height, you know, plus or minus an inch, pretty well. There's one for how far you're going to go in school. And if you're in the top 10% of the polygenic index distribution for education, you have a 71% likelihood of graduating from college, for four-year college. And if you're in the bottom 10%, you have a 9% likelihood of graduating from college.
Simply put, the polygenic index, or PGI, is a prediction on how your life will turn out based on your genes. It doesn't mean your fate is set in stone, but it does calculate what the most likely outcome is, from financial success to what type of friends you'll have.
You can predict your BMI, your cholesterol level, your blood pressure, your risk of depression, and so on. If you name an outcome, there's a PGI for it. And since it's using the same ingredient, it's kind of like you walk into your kitchen and you want to make something for dinner. You have the same ingredients there every night. It's just you're adjusting the amount. How much is this gene, sort of how heavily weighted is this gene for education? Well, a lot, but for height, it's a different gene that's most heavily weighted. And when you add up all the, so they're using the same really 3 million markers across the genome, and they're just giving different weights to those markers and adding up the sum for each outcome.
If this score can truly predict all aspects of life, the next question on everyone's mind is, how accurate is it? The short answer is, it depends. Conley says it's most accurate at predicting height, partially because most of that outcome is genetic and only about 15% is affected by our environment.
It's had the longest history and the biggest sample sizes. So I think it can predict around 60% of the variation. So it doesn't predict the whole 85%. But like I said, that results in being able to predict a baby's height pretty closely. Body mass index, like how heavy or light we are, is I think the next best predictor. And then like education and cognitive ability, then you go down to like things like personality type or whether someone's going to suffer from depression or how depressed they are, smoking behavior. Then we get to like more and more noisy predictors where yes, they predict, but they're not adding a lot of information, those polygenic scores, but they're all getting better each year as we get bigger samples to train them on and so forth.
In his book, Conley equates it to a meteorologist. They're not always accurate, but we still tune in to hear their predictions. And as he mentioned, the more data and variations that are collected, the better these predictions get. For example, the PGI is much better at calculating a person's BMI who is born today than someone born closer to the beginning of the 20th century.
If you look back then, most people were thin. Most people didn't have unlimited amount of calories to eat. They lived a more active lifestyle. So we were all thinner on average, and the wide tail of obesity was shrunken. So yes, you still had some obese people, but for the most part, there wasn't a lot of variation to explain, and genetics didn't do a lot of work in explaining it. So the polygenic index for body mass index didn't predict.
But today's world offers countless food options, which has created a wide range of differences in our body composition. As the environment has widened our dietary possibilities, our genes are able to show greater variation person to person and better predict BMI.
It's actually because of our environment now that the BMI PGI predicts better. I'll give you another example that's a little bit different. The smoking. In 1950, almost half of Americans smoked. And then in 1964, the Surgeon General's report was issued on the dangers of smoking. And around that time, we start seeing a steady drop in smoking rates. And today, whoever smokes is kind of hardwired in terms of their nicotine receptors to just be addicted to nicotine. And they're a very sort of core group of smokers who is very difficult for them to quit. And what we see is today, we can predict much better than we could in 1950 by genes who smokes.
Our genes work together with our environment, which means that if something is not normal in society, there's a good chance its PGI score won't be very accurate. For instance, the polygenic index for education always worked well in men, but wasn't accurate for women in the early 20th century when having females in higher education was taboo.
And now today, women make up more than half of college graduates, and we see that the polygenic index for education predicts much better for them. So it's not independent of the environment, is the sort of take-home message here. You can't just think of it as something that's deterministic, just wholly operating within our bodies. it's something that interacts with the environment.
Having access to this polygenic index opens the door to research opportunities Conley says couldn't have been done before. Peer studies, for example, are hard to do because there are so many unknown factors. Do two friends smoke because they have the same hobby? Did they become friends because they both smoke? Or did one person influence the other?
It's really hard to disentangle all those different possibilities, but having a polygenic index for smoking means that if my polygenic index for smoking is correlated with your smoking behavior, there's no way that your smoking behavior affected my genes. It's got to go from my genes to your behavior, or from your genes to my behavior. We find that just having a handful of kids who are like at the top end of the distribution or really likely to smoke kind of sets off a wildfire, a social wildfire across the network, and raises the likelihood that everybody's going to smoke in that grade.
Being able to use the PGI as a control helped them realize that the societal norms of the entire grade hold more influence than your closest friend.
Another example is that we know that spouses who are happy both tend to be happy, and we're in couples where there's depression, both tend to be depressed. Like, there's a strong correlation between spouses' depression. Well, one question is, do spouses who are prone to be depressed marry each other? They kind of end up together and they're already on their way to being depressed. It's like not about spouses causing each other to be depressed. They just found each other. Or is one causing the other to be depressed? And if so, does it go, is it asymmetrical? Like, there's an old adage that says, happy wife, happy life. That the idea that the wife or the woman in the household is kind of shapes the emotional climate of the household more than the man does.
It was a nearly impossible question to study until they were able to use the couple's genes to test these theories.
We looked at the polygenic indexes of spouses for depression, and we found that they're not correlated at all. So spouses are not, who are like, have low likelihoods of depression or high likelihoods of depression, are not sorting on that with each other. They're sorting on a lot of things like height and education, for example, but they're not sorting on their genetic liability for depression.
Then when they looked at how the husband's genes affect the wife's mood and vice versa, they proved that, at least genetically, the old adage is not true. They each affect each other's mood equally, and it's actually quite a large effect.
The effect of your spouse's genes on your depression level is a third as big as your own genes in your own body. So identifying these social genetic effects are kind of, that's what we call these indirect effects through someone else, is a really exciting new field, at least in my neck of the woods.
Conley notes that the presence of PGIs didn't just improve his work, but had him questioning aspects of his personal life as well. Join us next week as Conley describes how PGIs have influenced his parenting and finally puts the nature versus nurture debate to rest. Conley's book, The Social Genome, is available now wherever books are sold. You can find more information about Dalton Conley and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up, how to protect your DNA from sun damage when Radio Health Journal returns.
What's on your summer wish list? More beach days? Endless pool parties? No matter how you're soaking up the sun, Macy's Summer Favorite Sale has top designer looks for less. Swimming cover-ups from Ann Cole, LaBlanca, and more, 40% off. For the guys, new trunks from Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, and lots of others, 50% off. Plus, get half off kids' swim shorts and tees, too. Get ready for summer fun. Hurry into our Summer Favorite Sale, happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Our daughter, Jessie, loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective, too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
If you're lucky, you've made it through the first weeks of summer without a sunburn. However, many of us get too excited with those first few hot days that any thought of sun protection goes out the window. That is, until an angry bright red burn painfully reminds us. And though we can see a physical change on our skin, Dr. Susan Masick says the real issue to worry about is when those UV rays get absorbed into our skin. At that point, it begins to cause DNA damage in our cells.
In terms of the technical phrasing, it's described as oxidative stress. It increases reactive oxygen species, and you get free radical formation. And that's what, in turn, damages your DNA. And when it happens to damage the DNA in your cells, the cells are no longer able to repair themselves. And over time, the cells become more and more susceptible to changes to the point where the skin cells start to break down. You're going to be increased risk for different things like short-term sunburn, but also long-term increased risk for skin cancer.
Masick is a dermatologist and associate professor of dermatology at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. She's no stranger to the various protection products on the market, but one trend that's caused a lot of conversation recently is the movement for eating your sunscreen. Don't worry, we're not talking about the white paste you slather on before the beach. Edible sunscreen, or SPF gummies, are supplements that claim to protect you from sun damage from the inside out. But is a gummy able to replace your normal SPF?
And what happens with one of the most common ones, which is called polypodium lithotomous extract, or PLE, is the most common one. It is found that at the cell level, it could potentially protect from that DNA damage and decrease as an antioxidant that oxidative stress. So the idea is that potentially it could help in terms of increase what's called the minimal erythema dose, so the amount of sun that you can get before you start to sunburn. So that's helpful. In terms of broad studies, it has been shown to help in that oxidative stress at a cell level. So that's very helpful. But in terms of, is it going to be 100% across the board effective? Maybe, maybe not. So it's a supplement. It's an additive, but it's not your only protection.
Masick says in no way are these gummies able to replace traditional sunscreen.
So you still need your traditional sunscreens to provide you with the best skincare coverage and protection. Actually, the best protection would be not to get any sun at all, but that's not necessarily feasible in the summer. So we want to make sure people are enjoying themselves, but also protecting themselves.
That's not to say there isn't a place for SPF gummies in your routine, but in order for them to be as effective as possible, you need to be taking them every day. Popping one in before going out in the sun won't help mitigate damage. But since many of these supplements are comprised of antioxidants and plant extracts, would it be as effective to skip the gummy and just eat a bunch of berries? Masick says that strategy won't help as much as you'd think.
So antioxidants in general actually have a huge impact in terms of our overall health. But just ingesting antioxidants, for example, in fresh fruit or blueberries, strawberries, those kinds of berries, it may not necessarily provide you with as much protection as we would hope. So you still have to rely on your regular traditional sunscreens.
In fact, the one ingredient that seems to be the most effective for edible sunscreen is only found in plants from Central and South America. So not as easy to get as a pack of blueberries. But even though we can't truly eat our sun protection, the current mineral and chemical sunscreens perform really well, as long as you're actually applying them.
I find both equally effective, but you have to use them and make sure that you're applying generously. A lot of folks just don't put on enough or don't reapply when they should. In terms of mineral sunscreens, the beauty about mineral sunscreens, they're a little bit faster acting, less likely to cause irritation because they're natural minerals. People don't typically experience rashes or sensitivity to those products. In terms of chemical sunscreens, what's nice about them is they tend to rub in a little more easily. They don't look as opaque, for example, as some of the mineral sunscreens can. Some people will complain about that white cast that sometimes appears on the skin with mineral sunscreens. But if you rub in the mineral sunscreens or get the micronized versions, then that issue should not be a main problem.
Chemical sunscreens can also be an irritant, so Masick recommends testing out the product on a small patch of skin before applying it all over. For the most part, she says that since both types of products offer good protection, the choice between the two boils down to personal preference.
But also keep in mind, sunscreens come in different types of vehicles. So some are gels, some are creams, some are lotions, some are powder, aerosols. There are lots of different types of sunscreen in that regard. And again, that's a personal preference. But the key is you have to make sure that you apply and apply all over. You don't want to miss your ears or your lips or your scalp or different places that we tend to forget about. But also when you do apply it, you want to make sure you actually rub it in. So for example, those aerosols, convenient. People like to use them, but if you spray them in the wind, they're half of it's blowing away. So you want to make sure that you actually spray it into your hand and rub it into your skin.
Additionally, powder sunscreen can be a really great option for your scalp, but Masick says these need to be applied in multiple layers to truly get the necessary protection.
A lot of that depends on what you like, what's available to you, and what you know you're going to use consistently, because a lot of folks have their sunscreen in their bags and they just don't use them, or they say, oh shoot, I forgot to put it in my beach bag, and they go to the pool and they just don't have it with them. So always have it accessible to you, whether it's on your person, in your car, in your sports bag, or whatever it takes to make sure that you have it available.
While it's never too late to make sun protection part of your daily routine, you'll find much more benefits from starting as early as possible. Though many people assume that once a sunburn fades, your skin is just like new, UV damage is actually cumulative, meaning that it builds up throughout our lifetime.
It starts at an early age, when we're children, into our teenage years, into adulthood. So we want to make sure we're as careful as possible. So when folks say, well, I'm using my sunscreen over the last several years, I'm not understanding why I'm seeing some of these skin changes. Well, some of the damage was actually occurring way beforehand. So in terms of cumulative sun and sun exposure, over time, our skin just changes in terms of its ability to withstand sun exposure. So you'll see folks that have the telltale signs of long-term chronic sun exposure. The skin starts to look leathery in appearance, will have some discoloration to it, and then the texture changes as well. So in terms of it's never too late to start, we definitely want to start at any point. But if we could start earlier on, that can be really, really helpful in the long run.
Thankfully, there are steps you can take to minimize the damage if you find yourself out in the sun without any protection.
What a sunburn actually is basically an acute inflammatory reaction related to too much ultraviolet light. So the problem is that inflammatory reaction occurs a couple hours before you actually see the redness on your skin, or it feels warm to the touch, or it starts to get tender or pink in color. So you actually almost miss the boat at that point. So as soon as you start to notice any of those symptoms, you have to go inside. You have to actually get out from the sun. It's not enough to throw on a shirt or to then to try to put sunscreen on top of it or just to get into the shade. You actually have to go inside.
The next goal is to cool down the skin as quickly as possible. You can hop in a cool shower or post up next to an air conditioning fan, but make sure you're not putting something extremely cold like an ice pack directly onto the skin.
If you want to use something like an ice pack, you have to make sure you wrap it so the ice is not directly onto your skin. So you got to stay cool. Hydrate, because you're actually losing heat from your body with a sunburn. You can get dehydrated, so you got to make sure you're taking in fluids. And then typically, if you are experiencing a lot of pain or discomfort, something like NSAIDs, the ibuprofen, naproxen, all the package inserts, that can help with some of that inflammation. So you just have to stay really nice and cool. I think people are so eager to be outside. It's been a long spring, cold spring for a lot of us. And so people are excited to be outside. They just get too much too quickly in terms of sun, and they end up burning. But if they're on vacation, they feel like they have to go out the next day. You can't. You have to stay indoors as long as it takes for the skin to recover from that injury.
You can find more information about Dr. Susan Masick and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our production manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Greg Johnson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
My perfect day has sand, salt water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything.
Nothing is everything.
Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
What's
What's on your summer wish list? More beach days? Endless pool parties? No matter how you're soaking up the sun, Macy's Summer Favorite Sale has top designer looks for less. Swimming cover-ups from Ann Cole, LaBlanca, and more, 40% off. For the guys, new trunks from Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, and lots of others, 50% off. Plus, get half off kids' swim shorts and tees, too. Get ready for summer fun. Hurry into our Summer Favorite Sale, happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Why'd I go to the doctor? My heart would race just taking my son to practice. It didn't feel right. So I got checked out. Turns out I have atrial fibrillation, which increases the risk of stroke about 5 times.
Symptoms like irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness can come and go. But if it's AFib, the risk of stroke remains. If you have symptoms, contact a doctor.
I'm so glad I did.
Visit notimetowait.com. Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Medical notes this week. We can detect cancer faster than ever before. Scientists are now able to detect the genetic material shed by tumors in the bloodstream. A study published in Cancer Discovery reveals that this detection can occur up to 3 years before a clinical diagnosis. That's incredibly valuable time to plan intervention strategies and start treatment. Do interventions for undernutrition raise the risk of obesity later in life? New research in JAMA Network Open has put this worry to rest, showing that improving childhood nutrition can lead to significantly taller adults. Additionally, the weight gain during childhood is not linked to a higher risk of obesity or heart disease. These findings support the practice of continuing interventions past the age of 2. Do you want to be a better runner? Many of us want to optimize our workouts, but we may be forgetting to take psychology into account. Researchers have discovered that focusing your gaze on the finish line can boost effort and performance. Instead of glancing at all your surroundings while running outside, looking at one spot ahead of you will help you push through tough moments and lead to better outcomes. The new research appears in the journal Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin. And finally, your next dentist visit may include high-tech teeth. Scientists have created a new dental implant that provides the sensory feedback missing from traditional implants. This new product, paired with a gentler surgical technique, should reconnect nerves and be able to communicate with the brain just like a real tooth. The goal is to have the implants function and feel exactly like natural teeth. The research is published in the journal Scientific Reports. And that's Medical Notes this week. I'm Mayon Vosta-Betancourt.
If you could hear Old Spice Fiji Antiperspirant, what would it sound like?
First, you'd start with Fiji Antiperspirant's amazing scent of palm trees. Add pure notes of fresh coconut and layer on 24/7 odor and sweat protection.
You won't hear any dyes or parabens because with Fiji, you won't have any.
So while your regular antiperspirant sounds like this, Old Spice Fiji sounds like this. Sounds like it smells amazing.
Hi, it's me, Flo, here to tell you that with the Progressive Home and Auto Bundle, you get 24/7 protection, so you're covered no matter where the day takes you.
Even I added too much water to the pizza dough day?
Yep.
How about getting a call from my daughter to pick her up at the airport because her boyfriend is unreliable day?
Especially that day.
What about finding out that one of my pipes suddenly burst in my basement day?
Progressive has every day covered 24/7 with a Home and Auto Bundle. Also, you have a lot of bad days.
Oh no, that was all the same day.
At least you're covered with Progressive.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states.
Thank you for joining us this week and every week as we break down the science stories you need to know. You can find all of our past segments and guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X for daily content. And tune in next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
The right mix for park balls and butternut. This is Trail Mix 103.1. You're listening to 103.1 FM and 980 AM WPFP Park Falls. This is Trail Mix 103.1.
I knew he must have been about 17. He was
It's all the same. So can I take you home where we can be alone? Next we're moving on. It was with me, yeah, me. Next we're moving on. It was with me, yeah.